Radio Free Press, a podcast from the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom, campaigning for free, independent and accountable media. Jobs in the media and entertainment worlds are often seen as glamorous. However, the reality is, as ever, rather further from the dream. A recent survey of 4,000 workers by the Federation of Entertainment Unions has revealed these industries are hotspots for bullying. Indeed, more than half of those questioned said they'd been harassed or discriminated against at work, and 8 out of 10 women who reported harassment said their gender was a factor. Yet unfortunately for many, this doesn't come as much of a surprise. The NUJ had provided a dossier of shocking examples of bullying in newspapers as evidence to the Leveson inquiry. And the NUJ and Bechtu supplied another catalogue of horrific stories as part of their evidence for the BBC's post-Savile Rose review, which uncovered an endemic level of sexual harassment and a culture of silence, with only a minority of those suffering reporting the incidents. In response to this, the Creating Without Conflict campaign has been launched by the Federation of Entertainment Unions. And here to discuss this are Francis Rafferty, a campaigns officer from the National Union of Journalists, and David Campanale, a producer and NUJ chair at the BBC. David, first to you, why has this Creating Without Conflict campaign been launched now, and what's it focusing on?
It's been launched now, I think, because journalists have had enough. They've seen what's been going on in the newspaper industry, and within the broadcast world, there's a recognition that the same kind of problems are experienced in news production areas, whether it's in online, whether it's radio, or whether it's television. There's a great sense of urgency. There's a great sense of a real deep commitment to secure the culture change within the whole broadcast world that will make this the kind of industry that people want to continue working in.
Francis Rafferty, for the NUJ, did the issues become more relevant after the Leveson inquiry? I know Nick Davis from The Guardian talked about a culture of bullying in Fleet Street. Why were people not openly discussing it before?
Well, I think it's obviously been a long-term problem, and I think the NUJ has been representing people who've been bullied on national papers, but it really came home to us when we gathered witness statements for the Leveson inquiry, and it was a really shocking catalogue of the level of bullying that was happening in newsrooms. And I think we've known it's a problem, but I think one of the things the survey does bring out very clearly is a huge culture of silence concerned with bullying. And it's the nature of a lot of journalist jobs. They're freelance, or they have lack of security in their job, and they're too frightened to speak out. They think if they report their bosses or they'll be accused of causing trouble. And I think there's also, particularly in newsroom, there's a kind of culture where it comes with the territory, where being yelled at by your news editor is what you have to put up with. And I think there's just a growing acceptance within the union movement that this can't be accepted. There needs to be respect between people. It's not the best way to work, and people shouldn't put up with it, and they should be able to have the freedom to have somebody to go and talk to and have the matter sorted.
The report shows, perhaps unsurprisingly, that overall women were more vulnerable to bullying and sexual harassment, with 64% compared to 49% for men. BBC DG Tony Hall has pledged a zero-tolerance strategy. How is this being implemented now, post-Savile?
1 year on after the Dinah Rose opened her investigation into bullying in the BBC, this is the QC-led inquiry that was commissioned by the BBC Trust. 1 year on from that inquiry opening, I have yet to be convinced in my mind that the culture change the BBC has promised has actually happened. The BBC are very good with making promises, but we're not going to judge them by their words. We're going to judge them by the action that they've taken, and most importantly of all, by the feelings of our ordinary members who work in the programme-making areas.
Francis, the report also states that women have said that they've had to develop strategies to avoid sexual harassment as their careers progressed and to get on, and then found they were discriminated against because of age. What's your view on this? Is there a boys' club at the BBC and in newspapers, and how can this be tackled?
Well, that was certainly a response of some of our respondents. For example, one said, there's an old-fashioned macho culture by which bullying is seen almost as an honour. You have to put up with it to earn your stripes, and anything else is considered as weakness. Women come into the industry, they experience harassment and discrimination and bullying. They learn tactics, they learn how to get around it. But by the time they've learnt that, they're suddenly finding another form of discrimination is hitting them. And it's the discrimination about age, and women in particular, particularly in broadcasting, but elsewhere. They suddenly find they get to a certain age, and particularly for those on screen, once it wrinkles arrive and their grey hairs arrive, they suddenly disappear.
David, the respondents of the survey included household names and high-profile figures in the arts world, as well as those just starting their careers. So if harassment is being experienced across the spectrum, who is doing the bullying?
Well, the bullying is coming primarily from... Well, it can come from colleagues, that's to say people you work alongside, and it can come and typically does come from management. And it's about power. It's about control over people's lives. The Dinah Rose report talked about how shame, the mechanism of shaming, is used to isolate individuals, to then victimise them, to pick on them, and to get other colleagues in a team to tackle and exclude that person. And the kind of behaviour, we need to see sexual harassment in the context of men wanting power over women. So if you talk about, hands on a woman's chest, if you talk about sexualised, what men, some men will call banter, but it's overt sexualised words, it's about putting female colleagues in a position where they feel that they are very much the second class in that relationship. It's about controlling them. So comments that are made by BBC managers like, I like to see you, why aren't you wearing your high-heel shoes today? I like to see you in our high-heel shoes. In taking an isolation, you go, well, you know, what's the big deal about that? But as part and parcel of other forms of behaviour of control, about using promotions, about using trips, about using, you know, investigation, journalistic inquiries, whether, you know, you're going to get it or your colleague will get it, or lots of different ways are used by a manager to assert their control over their junior colleagues, and so that they become the centre and the focus of attention. And if you don't play by those unspoken rules, then shaming is used. And typically, in my experience, every person who complains about bullying and harassment at the BBC, they themselves are the ones who are driven out. Even after Dinah Rose, women coming forward to make complaints, their bosses might get a rap across the knuckles, but typically they end up back where they were, or they're promoted. The women complainants are typically excluded from their workplace. They are the ones who are isolated at home and, you know, are told when they can come back in. They're the ones that are listed and told that they could be made redundant. And this is the kind of story that we're seeing in the BBC, even after all the promises that have been made about a culture change. It's shocking, it's unacceptable, and the NUJ is committed to go the extra mile. We're willing to listen and take seriously the allegations of colleagues. We're not going to necessarily repeat everything that we've heard. We want to root allegations in facts and in substantiated evidence. But the key thing is your attitude. Are you willing to take a colleague seriously, no matter how junior they are, no matter how senior they are, about the kind of complaints and the experience that they're having?
Francis, anybody who works in the media and creative industries knows there's great competition to get in, and often people are freelance or work on short-term contracts. This must stop people from reporting harassment, sexual harassment and bullying.
Yes, certainly. I mean, many of the comments that we had from people were saying they didn't want to rock the boat. They thought if they complained, they wouldn't get another contract or the shifts would dry up, and people say, you know, there's a culture where people don't want to put a foot wrong, they don't want to offend people, and, you know, if you're a freelancer, they think, well, perhaps I'll just have to go somewhere else.
Francis, what are the effects of bullying on people and sexual harassment? It must be hugely detrimental to them and their work situations.
Well, certainly. I mean, in the worst situations, there have been people have committed suicide because of the way that they've been treated. And for other people, it's, you know, waking up every day in complete misery. Whatever you do, you know that you can't be right, and you see other people being promoted. And it's extremely demoralising. And, you know, it also leads to people having terrible problems with stress, mental health. I mean, it is a very destructive force. And that's why, as part of the Creating Without Conflict, we've put together a set of guidelines, both for freelance and for staff members, which will help them go through procedures when they've experienced bullying, harassment or discrimination. It gives them guidelines where to go to, what to do. But we're also putting the responsibility on organisations. There's lots of institutions, newspapers and broadcasters, the arts organisations, that they have to take responsibility to. We have put together a code of conduct. We're expecting these organisations to sign up to this. And as part of that, they will be ensuring that they have policies that will tackle bullying and the perpetrators of bullying.
David, so what does the new campaign hope to do? And are the BBC really going to do something this time?
I believe it when the BBC tells me to my face they want to secure culture change. The difficulty comes in the implementation. So they've promised, as Dinah Rose, one of the key recommendations, is that investigations will be heard by an independent manager outside of the department. The problem has been we've had investigations since Dinah Rose has been published, but one aspect of the procedure, including, say, a disciplinary and an appeals procedure, is still being done by people who are colleagues, that is to say, people they work alongside, other senior managers, people they know, people that could be their friends. So we want to see that changed. They've promised to deal with complaints within 30 days, and yet I'm still dealing with investigations that have gone on for over a year. They promise that complainants will be given the outcome. Well, actually, when it's come to the crunch, complainants are not told what's happened to the manager, even when they're found guilty. And they continue to be managed by guilty managers, even though one of the things they've been seeking is that they're not managed by those same people. So there's still a long way to go, and the NUJ is not going to let this go. We're going to persist in securing the culture change that our members have every right to expect. People should come into work with the expectation that they will not face harassment, unprofessional behaviour and bullying. And we need to see more evidence from the BBC that they're going to clamp down and clamp down hard. After 980 people submitted evidence to the Dinah Rose investigation, almost 1,000 people, the BBC at the end of 2013 admitted to only having sacked one manager. They admitted to only having dealt with just about half a dozen investigations. So lots of people submitting evidence, specific complaints around specific individuals, sometimes multiple complainants, and yet at the end of that of 2013, just one manager has gone. So we feel that there's a lot further that we need to go before we can say the BBC has changed.
Francis, can you tell us in the first instance then, who do people need to turn to if they're experiencing harassment or bullying? Is it their union or their union rep, or is it their manager? And if it's their manager who's doing the bullying, who do they turn to?
Well, in the first instance, our advice would be look at the company's procedures. So make sure you know that you're in the first instance reporting the incident to who you need to. Quite often it might be informally. There may be cases where your manager may not be aware of his or her behaviour. But if it continues, we say that your rep is somebody who can help you. Go to your rep. If you don't have a rep, then you can go directly to the union. And we will be able to help that person go through the various procedures and take the issue up with the management. I mean, certainly the survey reported that in 40% of cases, the intervention of the union was beneficial.
Well, let's hope the campaign is a huge success and more people do indeed feel able to challenge bullying and harassment. It's certainly been a long time coming. I'd like to thank David Campanale from the BBC and Francis Rafferty from the NUJ. This podcast was recorded and produced by the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom. I'm Claire Colley. Goodbye.